We were very clear in terms of expectation that we are still building the product out. It will take us a long time. We're not trying to do inside sales, etc. We don't even know all of those things, but we are building a product play. So it's going to be a product arbitrage. This is going to be a 10x product because of the foundation that we are building internally. And it will take us at least a couple of more years.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to an exciting new episode of the Insights podcast series from Accel. I'm your host, Anand Daniel. We are continuing with our podcast series on SaaS, and this is the third episode, the previous ones being episodes 46 and 48 of the Insights podcast series. If you haven't already, please do listen to the earlier ones for the full story at insightspodcast.in. Joining me today are Sudhir Conero from Zenoti and Anand Jain from CleverTap. While Zenoti is a vertical SaaS solution for beauty and wellness industry, CleverTap is a horizontal SaaS offering for customer lifecycle management and mobile marketing. Like we discussed in the previous two episodes on SaaS, both Zenoti and CleverTap are truly global SaaS products building from India, and Accel has been part of their journeys from their very early days. In this episode, we will delve deeper into what Krish and Shekhar set us up for. We will use the analogies and frameworks shared in the previous two podcasts and see the applicability and correlation between them to how Sudhir and Anand have been going about building their businesses. Let's dive right in. Hi, and welcome to another Insights podcast series. I'm excited to have the founders of CleverTap and Zenoti, Sudhir Conero from Zenoti and Anand from CleverTap. I'm going to ask each of them to introduce themselves first. So welcome to the podcast, Sudhir and Anand, and thanks for joining. I know you're in different time zones and at different times of the day and night. So really appreciate it. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Maybe let's start out with Sudhir. Why don't you introduce Zenoti, a quick intro, as well as the current scale of the company, and then we'll go to Anand.
Yeah, so Zenoti is like a vertical SaaS solution for the beauty and wellness industry. So think of it as the target market being spas, salons, medispas, fitness centers, etc. And we do an end-to-end solution for this industry in the sense that all the way from like an ERP and a CRM all integrated to run the entire business, all the way from the front desk to how they to pay their employees, to, you know, inventory, purchase orders, doing marketing to customers, collecting money, payment solutions which are integrated at the point of sale on the front end, etc. So it's a fairly comprehensive end-to-end solution, typically geared for not the single outlet spa or salon, but the businesses which are brands which have maybe on the average at least 5 to 10 outlets, but all the way up to, you know, people who have 1,000 outlets, etc. So we are more classify ourselves like a within the industry an enterprise / SMB solution which runs their business end to end. Today we are at about I think we have about 500 employees. We have more than 10,000 outlets which use Zenoti to run their business, and we're present in more than 50% of our business is in the US, and but we do have significant presence in UK, Australia, and a lot of Southeast Asia, India as well. And we are at about a little over 35 million plus in terms of size and scale of the business.
Thanks. Congrats, Sudhir. Anand, over to you.
Hi, I'm Anand. I'm the founder and chief strategy officer of CleverTap. CleverTap is a customer engagement platform that enables consumer brands to create an omni-channel magnetic experience to improve retention and conversion rates. Basically, we combine analytics, AI-led segmentation, A-B testing, and the whole marketing communication across multiple channels like WhatsApp, push notification, SMS, etc., to create this, what we call as magnetic experiences for users, for brand users, and then make sure that they are retained for life. So we literally help move three metrics for any consumer brand that uses us. One is the their monthly retention rate. The second metric being the conversion rate in total, and the third being the lifetime value. We have about 8,000 apps that use us, including brands like Vodafone, Gojek, Sony, Disney Hotstar, ClearTrip, Fandango, etc. CleverTap is across multiple regions where we have offices. We have about 250 employees in India, US, Middle East, Europe, and Southeast Asia. Each market being in a little different stage of their maturity for us. We've raised about $76 million of capital in the last 7 years of being in business. And we have enjoyed 2.5x growth for the last 3 years of monetizing the platform. And this is our fourth year now since we are monetizing the platform.
Oh, congrats again, Anand. Thank you for the introductions, both of you. So let's dive into today's podcast. I want to go deeper into what Shekhar and Krish had set us up for in the last couple of podcasts, which was an overview of SaaS as well as how to go about evaluating SaaS opportunities and building the company. So Shekhar gave the analogy of mountain climbing and talked about the various phases of getting mountain ready, surveying the mountain to climb, mapping out the trajectory and actually climbing. So I want to stick to that analogy today and want to start out with maybe the first question is, how did each of you get mountain ready? How did you get yourself? What was your background? Maybe a brief introduction there would be helpful. And how did that set up for the next phase? So Anand, maybe you can kickstart.
Absolutely. I'm very glad that this is happening over the phone and you guys can't see me. I'm not a very young entrepreneur. I have about about 20 years plus of experience, professional experience, before I started CleverTap. But
I know you actively climb mountains. I've seen pictures of it. So this is a good analogy for you.
Actually, I do. And I use that quite a bit, when I describe my startup journey. So last 20 years, when we started CleverTap and plus 7 years of now of CleverTap, so about 27 years of experience, I have started startups prior to CleverTap. And I was also part of founding teams and also like a regular team member, of startups. So I have quite a bit of an experience of how this kind of journey flows. The rest of the two founders are also engineers like me, and we were the ones that kind of stitched together marketing systems and the analytics and all of those things together to make this marketing communication happen. I think having been around the block for so long kind of prepares you for what's going to happen, and that was my prep before I started to climb the mountain.
Any specific things that really helped you from your previous journey?
One thing that has helped me, whether I was being part of someone else's organization or started my own, was just having the entrepreneurial mindset and to think holistically of how to solve problems. I think that mindset is very important as you jump into doing your own thing. Startup journeys are extremely long and sometimes they are very, very lonely, right? Because you don't have a benchmark, you don't have anyone that you're kind of chasing, etc., especially when you're creating a category. So being a little entrepreneurial and thinking through things, having good founders to go and seek advice from or run ideas to is, I think, sets you up for the journey ahead.
Okay. And maybe last question on that. How did you find your co-founders?
I met both the founders in my previous job, which was I was with Network 18. I was their CTO there, and I met Sunil, who we hired in as a COO, and Suresh, who's the third founder, was someone I recruited to run Burp, which was my previous startup that got acquired into Network 18. So a little convoluted story there, but the two of them I met, and we were working colleagues. I used to report into Sunil, and Suresh would report into me, and we were a very good team, and that's how we decided to kind of start off on our own.
That's great. So that's an important part, to have the right team to go mountain climbing. So great. So that's helpful. Sudhir, over to you. Maybe a little bit of your background and how that's
educated. To give some context in terms of my background, maybe I think to be ready to do a startup, I think, having some exposure to what you're trying to do is important. So when I worked at Microsoft for about 8 years, did a lot of software around internet and server side and, core operating system, that kind of stuff. So I came out of Microsoft being very savvy in terms of building products and, knowing what it takes to solve any problem in the right way, in the right design. I think that skill set was very strong. But I went and started a company called SumTotal Systems, which eventually was called SumTotal, rather, after some name changes, etc. But Really, one of the things I found, and it's part of getting ready to really do a startup, I think, is I realized we knew nothing about sales and marketing and what does it mean, because Microsoft never prepared us in that arena whatsoever. And so it was a learning experience, which was very rapid and for us to go through. And I think we still managed, of course, we built a great product. So we ended up having the best product in the Gartner quadrants and all that stuff. And eventually, after lots of twists and turns over 8 years, we emerged as being like about $100 million in revenue, catering to a very large enterprise market kind of stuff for human capital management, etc. Now, I think that prepared me in terms of saying, hey, what does it take to do enterprise software and navigate an industry and you know, be successful and all that. But I actually just took a break. And in terms of getting ready to do Zenoti, it was more like I wasn't working for a couple of years and ended up investing a lot of time in wellness and even invested in a business which was opening chain of fitness, spa, salon, kind of integrated outlets kind of thing. For one reason or the other, I ended up getting a little hands-on in that business and learning more because I would go work out, you know, and then eventually I started managing the business and learned a lot about the industry. Definitely realized it wasn't my cup of tea to actually run such a business, which was very consumer-focused. But there were about 7 outlets, realized how painful it was to manage all these business outlets sitting in one place without a proper software. Saw that most of the businesses also were, you know, just struggling. They were just managing and there was no good solution when you want to run a large business. So I think my getting ready was really, I understood I had the luxury of seeing the problem space very closely and knowing that this is not solved by anyone. And having the experience of naturally of having built enterprise B2B software. So ended up starting Zenoti. And I would say the key in terms of other ways of getting ready was I was lucky that early on we had other people who joined with me who, Dheeraj, who understood the industry extremely well, had spent a lot of time with various CEOs and others in the larger space who ran sales for us. And then, you know, Anand, who was the VP of engineering at SumTotal and having worked on deep enterprise software, you know, it was well supported very early on. And within a few months, even our marketing person, Sarita, was used to drive marketing at SumTotal and she joined. So I had the luxury of having very good people with me when we started.
So these were co-founders or early team members?
No, they were more early team members, but Dheeraj was the co-founder in the whole thing.
Got it. So maybe switching gears, you already touched upon how did you pick the mountain? It's very few people have the luxury of being the on the other side, having the customer pain point and feeling that.
It's more like just talk us. It's more like the mountain picked me. I was not even looking for a mountain. I was happy in, you know, being at home.
You're happy doing the gymming there in the mountain came to you.
Looks
like that. So, but did you go about sizing the market or doing any of those traditional things or anything else before you jumped in head on?
Yeah, so I don't think I would be honest. See, one thing was I had done a lot of work with the US. Obviously, SumTotal was a very global thing and I didn't do proper market sizing on a global front, but thought that we would build a business which is focused, which is built totally out of India. And because at that time I was in India in that window and focus on the whole ecosystem around India, Southeast Asia, Middle East. And one of the passions to actually go ahead and do it was to say, hey, maybe it would be fun to see if we can do a company out of India and cater to this whole ecosystem around us. But very quickly that changed and we took on a global view of it kind of stuff. But no, I would be honest to say, I did know that the TAM was small, but I didn't do very formal analysis, just back of the envelope kind of analysis. But I just knew there was nobody who was solving this problem. And it's unlikely somebody with the right capability would enter the space because it's a smaller market.
Got it. Were there other companies trying to do similar things in other geographies when you started out?
Yeah, but they were all focused on solutions which would work for single outlets, you know, point of sales, which work well, but not a large chain where the requirements are very different in how you manage a large chain.
So when you started out itself, it was for large chains in India and the nearby geographies, or where did you go after initially?
Yeah, So we will focus more on India, Middle East, and Southeast Asia kind of stuff. And yes, from the beginning itself, and given our background of having built mostly enterprise systems, our inherent tendency was to build complex enterprise solutions, which is has a lot of configurations, allows for a lot of business processes and rules, versus very simple, keep it simple kind of consumer, you know, apps which are works for low end stores.
Got it. But you did know that there were proxies of other companies in other geographies, which are creating larger companies. So you did have a sense that this could become large over time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I did. And I did do research of all the companies. In fact, I had tried to buy software of all the companies because I evaluated so many as for my business and couldn't find a single thing which worked. So eventually I had actually built my own simple SaaS solution for my company called Latitudes, which was a chain, you know, having 2-3 people work with me on that for me.
Chain of Spas. Initially, you were called, you had a different name, right?
Oh, we were called Manage My Spa. We chose that name with a lot of deliberation, but I can get into that later.
Yeah. Okay, got it. Okay, but which is good. You are managing your spa, so it was actually accurate name there.
Yeah, that's great.
So this is a great example of a very specific vertical SaaS software where you're going after a initial spa as a industry solution. All right. So maybe switching gears, Anand, yours is a broader horizontal solution. Right, so maybe talk us through how did you pick this this model?
Yeah, it's a funny beginning though, because as engineers, we were the ones that were stitching all the systems together, right? In my previous company, like getting analytics to work with the marketing automation software, getting reports collated there, and then bringing it back to some BI solution and all of that stuff. And when the three of us kind of, one day we were chatting and we were like, okay, well, this is clearly a pain in the hind. Like there has to be a better way to solve this, and there might be a large enough market. Again, like Sudhir, we did not do any research, we did not have access to any competitor products. We had some local software that our company was using to pull off marketing automation, but it was nearly not as good as the ones that are out there in the market. So
sorry, a quick thing for people not familiar with marketing automation, maybe a quick 30 second on what does that mean?
Oh, absolutely. Marketing automation software typically helps you reach out to your contacts. So if you are a consumer business and you have email addresses or these days push notification tokens of your users, you could send them emails, notifications. You can orchestrate messaging. For example, you could say, hey, I'm going to send an email out to a user. And if they do not open within 2 days, then I will send them a push notification or an SMS and so on and so forth, right? That is marketing automation. Unfortunately, we realize.
So all the messages we get is thanks to you.
Well, the email, not the spammy ones.
Good. So you add some intelligence to that. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Please continue. Yeah. So you are on the customer side.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we were looking at these things and we said, you know what? These marketing automation softwares, right? Their starting point has to be, you need to first understand the user. You need to understand user behavior before you can even send a message or a coupon or some sort of a message to a user, right? For example, if you've looked at an apparel, piece of apparel that's going to go out of stock very soon, you might receive a contextual message around that, right? You might say, hey, this shirt is going, you know, last two pieces left. But if you've never looked at that shirt and you receive a message out of the blue, it's literally spam for you. So anyhow, like, you know, with this insight, if you will, we kind of quit our jobs and we said, okay, we'll solve this problem holistically. And that starts with first understanding the user behavior. Who are these people? What have they done? And then segmenting users based on their behavior. So you group people by, you know, okay, well, find me new users who have never transacted or loyal customers who have gone away and so on and so forth. And then you bring on the messaging part, right? Then you can send them a notification or whatever. Now, there are two other trends, like, you know, that were going on that we noticed or observed. That one, the phone solves more and more use cases. That means, you know, everything's happening on the phone, which means that the amount of data that is being generated is going to grow exponentially. And second, the attention span of the user is going to reduce considerably, right? So you better serve the user right there at the right time when they are in the app or just about near real time. And we looked around, you know, there was nothing that was available. And to be honest, like, you know, we did not look around that much. But we looked around like real-time databases and we could not find anything that would work, that we thought would work. So we, as a startup, and this might sound a little funny, started writing a database. And this is where Shekhar first met us. And he was like, what the hell are you guys up to? Right? We said, okay, we are building a real-time database to solve a specific problem. So not only did we, the mountain we chose to climb, like, you know, had first we had to kind of go very deep into a valley. And from there on, we started climbing the mountain. And it was like building a real-time database and then building a solution on top of that. So it was not even built off something that you could just buy commercially or leverage AWS or something else. So ours was a little, you know, kind of a tricky journey, if you will. And I think when we started building CleverTap, the product, we were very clear in our heads that we don't want to build this for a specific industry. It can't be industry, you know, only for, say, for certain industries. Right? It has to be very, very broadly applicable because, you know, we receive communication from all brands, right? Whether it's an airline, whether it's a ride-hailing service, food delivery, a streaming app, and so on and so forth, right? So let's make something that's extremely broad, both in terms of the width of the product and the problems it solves, but also widely applicable across industries and not even restricted to a geography. So that was a extremely high mountain, you know, that we chose to climb. And that was our starting point.
When you started out, were there a lot of other competitors doing this as well?
We knew of certain competitors. So first of all, like, you know, when we started out, we did not do too much competitor research, right? We tried to find if there were any real-time databases, like, you know, that could actually solve for this exponential data. We actually started out solving an engineering problem, right? This amount of data that is being generated by the phone, you know, when every time a user accesses the device, etc., they do certain things, right? So is there something that can ingest and process this data in real time? Two, is there something that can be built on top of that? We found very quickly that there is nothing. There are players or point solutions that did analytics, you know, that would tell product analytics, for example, you know, drop-off rates, cohort analysis, all of that stuff. But analytics is relatively simpler to pull off because you could do it by sampling. You don't have to ingest all the data, right? You can be statistically significant data and you can just do the sampling part and you're good. And then the other set of point solutions were this marketing automation software where you feed in a list of email addresses, where you feed in, like, you know, some sort of you know, behavior of users, and you can use that to send notifications or emails out. There was nothing that married both the systems. It was engineers like us in my previous organization that would write code to kind of marry these two softwares to work together. And that was our unique insight, if you will, like, you know, that, okay, we need to build something that's holistic and bridges both of these things and offers it as one holistic platform.
Great. So we covered the initial journey, right, and how you picked the mountain to climb. Maybe switching gears, talk us through the early phases, finding the anchor customers, and how did you go about, and each of your industries are so different. Love to hear the initial phase of finding the product market fit and finding the first set of customers. Maybe Sudhir, you can go first.
Yeah. So initial customers wise, one big advantage I had was there was a business that I'd built, and, you know, I sold the business, but still I had good relationships. So that was my very first customer, of course, easy kind of stuff, right? And so it was like I had a place where I could try out all the software freely kind of stuff. But no, in terms of when we did go to the market, I do think while we built the solution for large brands and the intent of how we designed it, it's natural that when you're starting off a new go-to-market, you know, we were more quite keen to talk to more brands and more broader market than what we had started off with. And so we were selling to any good spa, salon kind of stuff. And at that time, we were more like, we called ourselves Manage My Spa. The intent being that we are more spa oriented and, you know, align our company, our employees, and even the customers to understand that, hey, we're all about you kind of stuff. And we're all about helping you manage your spa. So while we went broader, I think what we realized very quickly was, of course, that the smaller businesses get confused with our software because it is really designed with features which large enterprises really want and need desperately. But the small guys get confused. You know, we can be good at sales and manage to convince them to buy. But over time, you realize that, hey, this is going to have friction in it kind of stuff. So then we did start focusing on the larger businesses and just had to have the discipline to say, we do want to talk to the largest players because they are the ones who will be more interested. So it was kind of tricky because you're starting off new in an industry and you don't know the leaders, but you want to talk to the very top leaders kind of stuff. But interestingly enough, going to some of the trade shows, finding ways to network with leaders did get us in the door with meetings with a lot of people. So it's not like we went and did Google AdWords or did stuff like that. We were very specific who we needed to target and meet. So we got hold of them one way or the other. And, I think the fact to show that we were really laser focused on their kind of a business and all that helped. The other thing we did realize early on, figuring out which are the 10 customers also we felt after the first few sales or even the broader pipeline of attempt was, finding businesses which were still run by founder-led chains, like the chain was still owned by the actual guy who built the business, was a better thing because they were more passionate, they were willing to listen to the value proposition and be willing to be decisive about, making a decision and making a call. Whereas when you go to a corporate-led, like just as an example in India, you have Lakme Salons, which was at that time also was only about 100 outlets, but today it's much bigger. But, it was more of a corporate-owned entity kind of stuff. And so the decision-making process for those companies naturally so was very different. Whereas our first customer ended up being a business called Enrich Salons, and it was run by the founders who were very passionate, who were very hands-on. And so then we kept isolating the target customers to be more of that profile.
Got it. And what were the metrics you were tracking at this time? Like, how did you figure out you're finding the product market fit?
I think the metrics, I wouldn't say, we were very more larger business focused, each deal being bigger in revenue and all that. So I wouldn't say early on we had material metrics, or we never were really going after huge marketing spends to have customer acquisition cost as an issue. Our biggest thing was just always how fast can we take a customer live? They sign up on the dotted line. What is the thing which holds us back from getting them operational? And, how fast does our software, is there things we need to do in onboarding or things? Because it's not like a simple small business. We're almost implementing an ERP and a CRM, but still handling the change management from an older system for the entire network of outlets and all that. So if anything, I would say it was just that of saying, how fast can we take people back?
Got it. Let's switch gears and talk. Anand, maybe talk us through your first 10 customers. How did you go about that?
So I'll use an automobile analogy. Let's say you're trying to build an automobile and the first version of the automobile was a bicycle. And now you can't go find an enterprise customer when you built like a minimum viable product. For us, as I said earlier, the minimum viable product was a very broad product, right? It combined analytics and segmentation and a few forms of communication, right? The earliest channels of communication for us were push notifications and emails. Those were the only two channels we supported in the first version of the product. My goal, again, was not to go sell the product. I was very happy to find someone who would kind of take a bet on what we had built and would just use us alongside whatever they were using. Just give us a chance, right? Because it was still not quite ready of the way we had visualized or the way we had kind of envisioned what we were going to make. So in one of the first customers we found, who was willing to kind of take a bet on us was Ashish Hemrajani of Book My Show. I had known Ashish from before, but one day he just called me to discuss some sort of email problem that he was attempting to solve. And I took an auto rickshaw and went to his office. And I described the solution that we were about to build or we were just in the process of building. And literally he said, hey, I'll give you 2-3 weeks. Why don't you come and deploy the solution? And I'll be happy to try this out. I'll stop my initiative that I'm working on. So that was literally our first customer, quote unquote customer. They didn't have any paying relationships with any of the first customers that used CleverTap, were trying to use CleverTap. Our objective was to put it out in the real world, do rapid iterations on the product, learning from what we learned from the real world. Again, because we are not marketers, right? Unlike Sudhir, who ran a spa and a salon, who has some experience on that side, we are just engineers. We had no idea marketing automation or how does, why do marketers send messages and what time and all of that stuff, right? So we thought the best way to learn is to throw it out there in hands of what we now call as pure play digital or digital first customers. So instead of giving it to a bank, for example, in which a digital might be a very small initiative of their larger banking initiative, give it to customers that totally rely on the app or the digital channels to service their customers, right? Whether to sell tickets or to book cabs or do whatever, sell airline tickets. So we had the first few customers were, Book My Show was one of them. Then we had a travel online travel agent called Clear Trip. That was our one of the early ones. we had Fasos that tried us out, their food delivery, and they also own some of the kitchens. And we literally piloted CleverTap with these first few customers. We learned very aggressively with them and came up with this this model, what we call as the co-creation model. And the co-creation model, you know, right on the outset, goes and tells customers, hey, we may not be perfect, but we will work with you to co-create this product. And there are three rules of the co-creation framework. One, it has to, any feature request, etc., that you make of the product, it has to be a directional alignment to what we are building. So it has to be a part of our roadmap. Like, you know, if you were going to build this like a year down the line, but you need it now, so we'll prioritize that. And again, being a very small company, when I say prioritization, it is not like next quarter or the quarter after that. It literally means give us 2 days and we'll build this thing up for you. But not just for you, right? So it has to be useful for more than the one asking for it. Now, getting this diverse set of customers ensured that we could kind of triangulate it and say, okay, well, this, you know, food delivery customer, they asked for a feature. Will it be also applicable to the ticket booking as well as the travel agent customer? And the third is like, you know, that you would actively use it and promote it. That's the third principle of the co-creation framework. So we learned very, very rapidly, very, very eager to kind of go sit right next to the customer, learn from them, what are their challenges, and literally build out the product in real time. So the core engine, we spent, you know, like a year and a half building it, but the product on top of the core engine was like, we built it in collaboration with our customers. And for the first 10, I would say, as I said, quote unquote, they were not paying us in the early days. We could build what I call as an MVP. So it took us 3 years to build the minimum viable product of CleverTap. But when we launched, or when we started monetizing the platform, we knew that we had a winner because it was actively being used by some of these customers.
And when you started monetizing, how did you go about, what was the business model that you picked at that time?
That's a great question. We had no idea. We tried, you know, finding a few things. If you look at CleverTap's product trajectory, we started completely free for the first few customers. Then we put up some, you know, we didn't put too much science into the pricing model. We just say, hey, you know what, you give us $1,000 a month and you can all you can eat product. Which thankfully, no one believed and no one signed up for a product, you know, then $1,000 a month, unlimited product, right? We were not able to attract any enterprise customers. And the ones using us were not like, you know, at massive scale that we see these days, right, in India. Very quickly, we evolved to learn that CleverTap is more valuable to the larger enterprises, right? Because you could actually show a lot of improvement in retention numbers, in their conversion rates, in the lifetime value. You can actually make changes to their business that they can see a positive impact. So very gradually, like, you know, within the 3 years of monetization, we kind of flipped from free for all or a freemium product all the way to an enterprise grade product. And the way we evolved our pricing was, then we put some science, like, you know, again, we learned from enterprise customers what is valuable. We looked at a few competitors, and now we have like kind of two pricing models. You can pay for the amount of data CleverTap holds for you, and everything else is unlimited, or you can pay by the monthly active users that use your product.
Got it. Sudhir, how did you price the products early on?
So I think we looked at, you know, firstly, it was, pricing was harder, I would say, in our case. We looked at peer companies globally as to how much they were charging. Models were based on price, dollar per cent per month kind of stuff, etc. And initially, honestly, we just tried to pick a number which was in the realm of being in that area or a little higher than them. But after, you know, the first year, you know, after having the first few customers and all that, I think is when we really took stock of how should we price. And then we changed our packaging approach. We, you know, because we were very enterprise centric compared to the other solutions which were out there for single outlets kind of stuff. And so eventually we ended up pricing ourselves quite a bit higher than anybody, you know, globally kind of stuff. So our best competition was pricing at about $100 per month per store. And we realized that larger enterprises have deep problems to solve. Also that we were focused on businesses which were making a lot more revenue per month per store compared to the other solutions, which were very simple. So our target customers were healthy customers with the ability to pay and problems at which no one was solving. So like we ended up being more like $400 per month per store as we went international. Having said that, I would say in India, we never could really get that kind of revenue. It was only pricing made sense as we left and expanded outside India. So in markets like Middle East, we were doing $300 per month, whereas markets like US and Australia and UK, we could be more at $400+ per month per store.
Got it. That's very helpful. Maybe a quick 1 or 2 minutes on how did you fund yourself this phase of the project, and when should startup founders, particularly in SaaS space, think about funding? Because the early phase, maybe you bootstrap and you build the product, and then how should they think about funding this early phase?
Yeah, I think for us at Zenoti, I would say we were largely self-funded, and luckily enough, we had people who, you know, had the conviction, including the founders, and, you know, to invest and get the company to a certain stage where the product was ready, the go-to-market happened. And I think being an entrepreneur before, being successful before, helps you have the confidence to say, and of course, in our case, we just had the luxury of knowing the industry and the market so well that we were not anxious about funding in our minds. In fact, our first round of funding, which was with Accel, we never even went to Accel or any VC. It was more like Accel came to us and found us and said, we would like to invest. And we told them we're not even looking at any investment, or it was not on our radar kind of stuff. So I think, you know, it's hard. My answer, my experience is quite different given the fact that I had the exposure before and, you know, could afford to say, no, we'll figure it out. But for others, I would generally say, yeah, getting to at least a product which has, you know, $500,000 to $1 million ARR kind of number is important before you go looking for professional VC kind of funding kind of thing. But if you're building B2B and enterprise kind of solutions, if you're prudent, actually, you can make sure that your first few customers are paying enough money that it kind of sustains you and helps you kind of stuff over to be more cautious about burn. It's quite different in B2C where burn could be very early.
So if you can build the product early, get your customers to pay, that itself can act as your funding. Right, so that's
yeah.
What you're saying.
And especially if you're doing based out of India, the cost can be quite low initially. So doing this out of the US would have been exorbitantly expensive for us, of course, yeah, in the early days.
Absolutely. That's one of the India advantages we talked about in the previous podcast as well. Anand, how was your journey?
I would echo what Sudhir said about being around the block. You know, you have some level of confidence. So when we started out, we bootstrapped it for 1 year. And as I said, we piloted very early with Book My Show. And Ashish then, I think, sent an email to Prashant and Shekhar to come take a look at us. So we were very lucky in that sense that Axel came over, cut us the seat check. And we were very clear in terms of expectation that we are still building the product out. It will take us a long time. But the thesis was very solid that this is a product play. This is not, at least for us, it's not a cost arbitrage model. We're not trying to do inside sales, etc. We don't even know all of those things. But we are building a product play. So it's going to be a product arbitrage. This is going to be a 10x product because of the foundation that we are building internally. And it will take us at least a couple of more years. So we got funded by Axel seed money. And a year later, as we again did a few more pilots with, you know, with early adopters, we got Sequoia to come in and, you know, they led our Series A, again, pre-monetization. And literally after 6 months of Series A, we collected our first revenue check from a customer. So different story, completely different. Again, advice to whoever who's listening, this would be like, you know, to not have as much confidence as we had. It's very rare, you know, to build an MVP out, pilot it out, like, you know, get those early revenue checks flowing in, establish product market fit, and then maybe go for funding.
Got it. And it depends on each person's financial and situation in life. Right, in general, you guys, both of you had the experience and had the wherewithal to build the product at least for a year or so, which is great always. And then the investors, you have more data points to look at and back you deeply from there and first checks.
Correct.
And on. Yeah.
And we also had investors who took a bet on us, right? Like pre-revenue company doing two rounds of funding is, I would say, virtually unheard of. But we had deep investors who could understand the technology part of it, right? Like what we were building and where we were heading with the technology. And that helped tremendously because there was no pressure to kind of go sell.
Yeah, unheard of for you, but many of our companies are pre-revenue. So from that point of view, not so much from our side. But that's good. So switching gears now, you built a product, you have your first set of customers doing some early revenue. Talk us through the scaling up phase. Maybe Anand, we'll start with you. How did you go from initially the few customers to expanding that out? And also along the way, when did you start expanding across geographies, if you did?
So we had a little contrarian theory when we were selling. Instead of building in India and selling to the West, our thesis was that, hey, we will start selling in the home market. We'll start selling to Indian software startups, sorry, consumer startups, like, you know, who might need a product like this. And not only did we sell in India, but we also kind of got over some of the very large enterprise customers from India. And then we expanded into Southeast Asia. We set up an office in Singapore. And from there on, we started attacking that market, if you will. So for us, the scale or the climbing up the mountain would come from two factors, right? One is getting to more verticals, more deeper established verticals like streaming apps or ride-hailing apps, food delivery, fintech, retail, etc. And also geographical expansion. Like, can we go and instead of doing geography by geography, can we kind of go rapidly deploy into multiple geographies and see how do we find our traction in those markets? And that explains, like, you know, in the last 3 years, we have now 6 regions where we operate out of and customers from 100 plus countries.
Got it. And how did you do the sales? Was it inside feet on street? Like, maybe talk us through the sales model as well.
Yeah, so it was feet on street in the early days. And even now, we prefer what we call as demoing the product. So when we go out, we grab a meeting, we actually show the product. We very rarely kind of send slides over or we send some sort of a one pager, etc. Showing the product is a lot easier for us. We have a little demo account that we can demonstrate the capabilities of the product. Since it's a category play, if you will, like, you know, we are creating a new category where you have this unified platform. Then if I talk about the product, right, if I go tell, hey, we combine analytics and this and the other, people kind of get skeptic because they think it's like all-in-one product that is probably good at a few things, but not everything. Once you show the product and you show the capabilities, it makes a big difference because now once the light bulb goes top of the head. So and that's why it was easier for us to kind of in the home market in India, go show, you know, take the laptop around, show the product to as many people as possible. And inside sales was not our preferred mode because in inside sales, you try to kind of grab a meeting or, you know, try to do the sale over the phone. In fact, inside sales is a very recent phenomenon in CleverTap where we have BDRs that try to kind of, you know, do the demo on the phone. Early days, it was all about going to meet someone and then showing the product. And we typically divide our motions into 3 parts. One is called Scout the Market. It's founder-led. I do it. So I go to different countries and I try to find the ecosystem. Who are there? Can I find some potential partners, potential customers, some VCs through which, like, I can get portfolio introductions? The goal is not to sell. The goal is to understand and see whether a product like CleverTap would resonate in those markets. So we call that Scout the Market motion. After the Scout the Market motion comes Meet the Market motion, in which you have a few customers, you have a few large customers. For us, large customers is anyone that pays us $36,000 of ACV and above. Can we get those customers? And can we get a few of those customers? And once we have that, that's what we call as the Meet the Market. And the third stage for us, third motion for us, is Scale the Market, in which now we have an on-ground team in the market. We have marketing, we have success, we have partner people, and we fully scale the market. So that probably means revenue of $2 million and above in that market, coming just from that market. So for us, any new geography that we kind of open into, like, you know, goes through these 3 stages. And finally, that's the scaling. So we now have like the scale operations across 6 geographies.
And what kind of customers are you able to close on the phone itself inside? So $36,000 or more is on feet on street, and less than that, you try and close on the phone? Or how should the listeners think about what kind of businesses you can afford to have feet on street versus having to do the sale over the phone?
Correct. So we still don't quite sell on the phone. We do the basic bank qualification, whether they have used a product like CleverTap currently. Have they heard of CleverTap? Is there a need? Do they have an app that's live in the App Store or Play Store, and so on and so forth, right? Is this a digital pure play customer? And once that is established, we hand that over the BDRs, hand it over to the salesperson, who then does either a Zoom call or tries to go see the customer in person, and then does the selling part, which ultimately leads to a closure, one way or the other.
Got it. Sudhir, over to you. How was your journey
Yeah, in terms of scaling, I think, see, for us initially, it was definitely, you know, we would actually visit some of these stores, because one thing, you know, we realized is though we think spa, salon, they're all the same, every chain of salon or every chain of spa or a fitness center has very unique business processes on how they acquire customers, how they, you know, programs they have for loyalty and what their pain points are, etc. So I would say that for the first, even not just the, definitely for the first 10, but maybe the first 10 in every geography, you know, we would actually visit the stores, we would experience their issues, talk to the receptionist, learn about the place, go to their website, think from a consumer perspective, employee perspective, and all that stuff. And based on that research and assessment is when we would reach out to the management kind of stuff, because we would have a good sense of what their problems are, because then we would know how our platform would address those problems. And I think the more research we did and it went after accounts, the easier it was to get their attention in terms of agreeing to meet us. Because in our case, I can tell you, we just never had any warm introduction to even a single account of ours. Every account we have closed has been always through research and, you know, finding, etc. So that worked in the early stages. And then I think now as we have grown after the first 10, I think doing the testimonials, the videos, because it's a vertical industry, it's highly reference oriented. So when people see, hey, oh, that brand is using you and driving revenues or changing their user experience inside the store, that does get attention. So we find testimonials have been one of the best ways to get to the next wave of attention kind of stuff. And as we have grown, I guess we've gotten better at speaking our value proposition for each market, like the US is slightly different than Australia. And so our collateral and all the outreach programs are more aligned. Now, we are a very targeted market. So we don't do things like Google AdWords and stuff like that. We have a, like, actually a named account list by city that is a target account for us. And we go after those accounts, you know, by through an outbound team from India, which does lead generation. So they research these accounts. So now research can be done online. It doesn't need to be done by walking into the store, because we have enough know-how and knowledge and train people on what to expect. And they can make a pitch which is reasonably aligned with the business issues, etc. So that's how it scales for us. And I would say we do most of our sales online. We rarely visit a customer. Visiting a customer would require it to be a really large customer, like someone who has more than 100 outlets, or someone who's going to pay us maybe $300,000-$400,000 a year kind of ACV may warrant a visit. But we have closed much larger deals also with maybe just one visit in the middle. So usually the sales process starts only online, but may involve one visit to close the deal.
And going outside of India, when did you start that? Any learnings from that phase?
Yeah, going outside of India, definitely, actually, what I would resonate what Anand said, which is, you know, having one of the founders go outside India. So in many cases, it was me, you know, when we started off in Middle East, I would go and learn about the space and industry and research it myself kind of stuff and, you know, win the first few customers and all that kind of thing before we start establishing a more defined, you know, local team, etc. So that has always been what worked. I mean, most of things like Australia and other regions, Dheeraj, who was one of the other founders, went in Southeast Asia, whereas Middle East and the US is something which I went and, you know, got that going kind of stuff. So I think a lot of people think of hiring some sales rep in the US and saying, oh, that's how I'll get started. I think that's very hard. You know, one of the founding team members should be an integral part of getting that going.
Great. So last question from the main topic is, if you had a time machine and could go back and advise yourself when you started out, what would you do differently?
One thing I would do differently is just the fact that maybe do the TAM analysis a little more methodically early on and just say, hey, let's just go and do this in the US directly kind of stuff, you know. I think we had the exposure. It's not like we didn't have, you know, prior company. We had sold large enterprise deals in the US, everything. It was just we were complacent or thinking we will focus on that market. I think, you know, the US is the market eventually, which for most such business models like ours, you couldn't have built a large business without coming to the US. And I think we were more not thinking long term.
You'd have still built it out of India, but gone after US as the initial market.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yes. You know, so it took us a while. We went through India, Middle East, Southeast Asia before we came to the US. But only after we came to the US did our business really, accelerate in terms of growth and all that stuff. So,
got it. Anand?
For us, it would be the brand for sure. As engineers, you think, hey, we built a great product. I can go demo the product to customers. What could go wrong, right? They'd understand the value proposition. What we did not realize was that brand gives you a lot of air cover where you can get invited to a lot of the consideration sets instead of you knocking on doors and trying to kind of hustle your way into accounts and all of that stuff. So we did not invest in the brand. Brand building is something very recently started that, I think a few months ago. You'll see a lot more of that in the coming few weeks and months. But that I think we should have invested in a lot sooner. Product, we know how to build products. We just don't know how to build brands. And I think that's an area of investment I would have done.
Got it. Thank you. This is very helpful. Rapid fire, 30 seconds, one question each. Anand, highly recommended book for founders. Anything from your side?
Play Bigger.
Play Bigger. I said only one of you, but Sudhir, anything from your side?
Flight of the Buffalo. I forget the author's name.
Flight of the Buffalo. Got it.
Must read for every entrepreneur.
Got it. I'm noting down both these books. I've not heard of these two and I love reading. So best piece of advice that someone has given you, Sudhir?
To learn to listen.
Agreed.
Most people don't listen well. So that's been grilled into me with one of my board members who was on my board previously in sum total as well.
Awesome. Anand, one personality trait that a founder must have?
I think self-awareness. A lot of us think we are supermen, superhuman. But being self-aware always helps. A lot of founders are self-aware, but just even more self-aware is always helpful.
Got it. So the one personality trait that a founder must not have?
I think thinking that they know everything, being overconfident, I think being humble is important. So a lot of founders are very confident and I think that's dangerous.
Thin line between both those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
And last question to you, Anand, personal productivity tool or app?
I don't have one. I think Gmail for me does it. So I just try to organize my life around Gmail and calendar. I don't have any personal productivity tool or app I use.
Sudhir?
Yeah, nothing in particular I use. I use notebook when I need to take notes and make plans.
Got it. Great. Guys.
A notepad.
Notepad. That's great. Guys, really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much. There's been a wealth of advice here for the founders listening. Thanks a lot.
Hope you enjoyed this conversation with Sudhir and Anand. We covered a lot of ground here, from picking the idea to the early days of both these companies. We also discussed finding product market fit, early customers, go-to-market, and pricing strategies. I hope you find this series on SaaS helpful as you go about building your own startup. You can find more podcasts from the Insights podcast series from Accel at insightspodcast.in and also look forward to hearing from you at Accel_India on Twitter. Please do follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whichever platform you prefer listening to your podcast. And we would greatly appreciate it if you can leave your reviews there so that other listeners can discover this podcast. Thank you.